The Grey Hat Beard Podcast.
Oh, that is a lot shorter. Maybe I truncated too much of that. Hello and welcome to Grey Hat Beard Princess, show 69. I am the Grey of Grey Hat Beard Princess. My name's Kevin McDonough. I'm the head of practice for Modern Workplace at CPS and Microsoft 365 Apps and Services MVP.
And my name is Al, and I am the Hat, and I work at Microsoft as a technical architect in the Microsoft Technology Center.
And we have a lovely guest with us. We have a guest with us. Will, would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Will Rowe, and I'm the talent, I guess, maybe. I'm a recruiter, and I own a company called MS Talent, and we focus on placing people in the Microsoft technical space, and I'm terribly delighted to be here, especially on episode number 69. I know you've been waiting to hold that one for me.
As I started writing it out into the notes, I was like, oh, I hadn't realized I'd invited Will to this one. That was asking for trouble, yeah. Really.
You've got no chance now, mate. I'm sorry. You've set the tone. The bar was already low with me. You know that, but you know, we're in trouble now.
So we're going to be chatting. We're going to unfortunately skip the news today. We are down a couple of hosts. Louise is off at a conference, and Gary is rightly celebrating his daughter's birthday, which is far more important than wittering on with us. But we're going to be chatting with Will about careers in IT, which seems a kind of topical thing at the moment. There's lots of changes, careers. We talked about the Great Resignation, all sorts of things with tech layoffs. Lots of negative news, really. But Will, you wanted to kind of brighten that up and take a more positive slant to it.
I mean, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, Kev. You know me. I think there's lots and lots of layoffs. What have we seen? Twitter, Facebook,
Amazon today.
I think. And these are obviously large global organizations who I think periodically go through cycles of sort of hiring and cutting and hiring and cutting. So, I mean, obviously with one of those companies is we've seen a sort of a recent acquisition, changes to the culture, megalomaniac in charge, who knows? But the certainly here in the UK, and that's really, I guess, what I can talk about most, is we're seeing things very differently. We have had for the last 2.5 to 3 years a significant skills shortage here in the UK. Lots of organizations are hiring, lots of people are looking for roles. So we're seeing quite a lot of move. You talked about the Great Resignation. We're starting to see the Great Relocation. TM.
What about the Great Reshuffle?
Yeah, well, and all, you know, the same people moving from one company to another,
And when you say the Great Relocation, is that people moving because they don't have to go into offices anymore? Or
yeah, it's we saw a lot of it during the pandemic where people moved out of the cities frequently to go and often stay at home with family and house prices. I live quite rurally here in Kent, and so house prices have increased because of the amount of people who started shopping around for a place with a garden and stuff like that. So that in itself is driving movement too. But things are, you know, from talking to other recruiters in the area that we recruit for, things are buoyant. People are moving. Organisations are hiring fairly significantly.
As you say, there is definitely demand out there. I mean, I speak to a lot of clients about what we've termed a great reshuffle, but also, I see a lot of that being a personal choice, you know, so people choosing that they want to actually move to the, you know, to Kent or somewhere with a garden, somewhere further away from maybe the head office because they can carry on working. That personal choice plays in a lot now to the decisions that people are making. And I mentioned it on Saturday when I was talking at the Viva Communities Day. It feels like employees are interviewing employers much more hardly or much more harshly than they used to, rather than interviewees just being interviewed by the employer for a role. Would you say that's right, that people are kind of making, you know, choosing the right employer for themselves in terms of what fits their their preferences for commuting and ways of working?
I would definitely say that, yes. People are, job seekers are more savvy as well over the last few years. I think they've realized that they've got options, certainly in our industry. And companies that haven't adapted or evolved over that period of realistically the pandemic lockdowns are struggling to retain people and frequently to get people. So I mentioned it earlier, but you know, I ran a poll last year on LinkedIn to get a bit of a feel for what people are looking for when they're moving roles. And it was literally just a straightforward two answer poll, which was, you know, you've got two offers in front of you. Which one do you take? The one which gives you hybrid working or home working, or the one which it means that you're in the office for the majority of the time. And 93% of the people that responded to that said that they would take, that they would actively reject the office working role, and they would want the hybrid and the home working one. And that was the best part of 800 people responded to that survey. So if that's not an indication.
Be interested to hear that again now, because I'm certainly, I'm in Kent as well. I'm certainly seeing, maybe not necessarily quite as much on the IT side, but friends who live locally are wanting to get back to the office or wanting to get back into people, back into seeing people a little bit more.
I don't think they
want to
get back into
traveling.
People.
Maybe that is why they're going to the office. I don't know.
I'm not comfortable with that, Kevin.
But do they want to do that every day, though?
Go into the office. Yeah, quite a lot of them. One of my good friends is now going to the office far more than usual, and he sees he'd rather be in the office and be at home on there. So I'm not saying everyone is like that, and that's certainly not me, but I'm seeing that swing back towards it kind of feels weird going to the office to more people around here saying, no, I'm going back to the office more often than not. So be interesting to see. Just, I wouldn't expect that number to go down to 50-50, but I would have thought the number going to the office would be slightly less.
I think it comes down to so many different factors, though, doesn't it? I mean, now working in London 2 to 3 days a week. I actually quite enjoy it. I quite enjoy going in and seeing people and seeing clients. That's one of the things that I really missed when I was working remotely. I didn't get to engage with clients. So I'm really happy to do that. Going in 5 days a week, if I wasn't meeting clients, and I would kind of be a bit resentful if I went in and just had to sit on Teams calls all day and, you know, had to go in and do that. There are things that I can do better remotely, but there are things that I can do better in the office. And, you know, I think that goes for most of us, that we'll have a different sweet spot about when it's right to go into the office. I think that really varies also on, you know, what your home setup is like, but also where you are in your career, what your role actually is. And this is something that, you know, we see a lot of organizations going, right, there's a blanket, 5 days in the office, 3 days, 4 days. But actually, it really should depend on the role that you're actually doing and what you're actually being asked to do in that job. Because that seems to me to be a really big factor. You know, if I was a developer and I could just work anywhere and, you know, just as long as I've got my headphones and I've got my laptop and I've got my Wi-Fi,
comfortable setup,
then why would I need to be in an office to do that?
Being distracted by project managers. And I guess, well, are you seeing more people where people have started a job with the expectation to be hybrid, and that expectation either isn't happening or is starting to change, and people are looking again, changing quicker?
I don't know if necessarily seeing people changing quicker, but certainly organizations are starting to update their policies. There's probably half a dozen companies that I can think of off the top of my head who were 100% home-based and who have started introducing a mandatory day to 2 days a week in the office. And their hiring has moved from being very regional before the pandemic to looking nationally within the pandemic. And now that we seem to be coming out the other side of the pandemic, that now they're possibly they'll still look nationally, but they've got a preference for someone who's possibly a little more close to the office, and that seems to be driving the sort of the newest wave of recruitment. Just going back to what you're saying, Kev, about, you know, people wanting to go into the office, I think for a lot of people the there was a real sense of freedom during the pandemic, whereby, you know, we could suddenly work remotely without a need to go into the office. And for a lot of people, you know, I think if, especially outside of technology, that's not something which everybody had access to before. And so they were saying, well, actually, this is now something which I actively want to hold on to and to keep. And I think that's probably where people were coming from. I don't know
how it would be. It's that freedom, isn't it? It's that choice, having choice yourself about when you can go into the office, when you can't. I mean, you're not going to have that full thing, as Al said, of, you know, when the clients need you there, you need to kind of arrange that, but not having to be the same every single time and have that flexibility. I think that's what's driving people to feel more comfortable. And just very quickly, for anyone listening on the podcast, hearing weird dinging noises and things like that, Will did warn me earlier that it's about witching hour for his dog. So we might see a dog appear every now and then.
That was Buster. He came in, he did a drive-by, he wanted to say hello, and he's now gone. But he'll be back. He'll be back whenever he
pleasures. The joys of working from home, yeah.
Yeah, so we don't have an office for my company. So we've got 4 permanent employees in the office, and we've got someone part-time based in South Africa. So we don't have an office. So we all work remotely. My colleague Chris lives about 10 miles away, so he comes into the office. So it's my home office. We've got a couple of desks in here, and he'll come in and work for a day or two a week. But beyond that, our aim is to get together every 8 to 12 weeks as a team, and do, you know, we've got a team day coming up in the beginning of December, where, you know, it's sort of offsite, a couple of nights, we're going somewhere nice, and there's going to be learning and training and drinking. And probably, you know, I mean, look, it's a lovely place, and no doubt we will get thrown out. But yeah, you know,
that's all... everywhere. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you have a booking from Will Rowe, watch out. Yes.
The good thing is Buster's coming as well. So, you know, it's gonna be, you know, it's
just you have your escape dog.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, it wasn't us, it was the dog entirely. I don't know how he got on the wall. So yes, that's but I think, you know, this gives greater flexibility. So the benefits to an employer hiring nationally is it gives greater flexibility in a probably fairly tight candidate pool. And
is that something? Because, well, that's the way you describe that. That sounds ideal, and it sounds like it's, you know, it's almost a benefit of the way you work and the way you're structuring your company. Is that something that you're seeing employers kind of promote in terms of the way they work like that, and those sorts of, you know, quarterly offsites as a way to actually build team and build culture? Are you seeing employers kind of promote that and you know, prospective employees respond to it and go, actually, that sounds really good, over and above the kind of the day job, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that the employers that are pushing this are the ones that are frequently slightly more forward thinking. Cultural change is difficult in organizations above a certain size. I mean, you all know that. But companies have had to change over the last few years. And the ones who are holding on to kind of what made them successful up until the pandemic and haven't changed are going to be struggling for the next few years, because we are in a significant battle for talent across the UK currently. organizations who perhaps were kind of overlooked or ignored because they were smaller companies in the Southwest, the Northeast, Midlands, wherever, and now their staff are now being attacked by recruiters, and not even good looking ones. I mean, you know, but I'm talking about, you know, the run of the mill people. Do you know what I mean? The LinkedIn in mailers, my God. But it's just they're going after these people in and they probably wouldn't have been headhunted particularly before, because pre-pandemic, you know, it's a 50-mile radius of wherever. You know, it doesn't particularly get much appeal. But now there's a relatively untapped market of people who are on 10, 15, sometimes 20, 25 grand less than their counterparts in London and the Southeast. And so we're starting to see a rebalancing of salaries across the UK. And that's a challenge for employers, because employers who are traditionally local have got local salaries. And I had a conversation with one of my customers last week, because I'd been in and spoken to the board and talked to them about, again, the changes that we're seeing across the industry. And I was saying, your people are going to get attacked. You know, they're going to get targeted. You're going to start losing people over the next 12 months. And they've lost one person, and they've just had somebody else say it's getting more and more difficult to turn down companies.
And are they moving to bigger companies or not necessarily?
Sometimes bigger, but the role doesn't change. So the customer, you know, most of my clients are the Microsoft partners. So it would be moving to someone like a CPS, for example. Yeah, no, it would be moving to someone like CPS, for example, from a smaller organization. And
it's not the big enterprises who bring people. No, up. It's bigger partners rather than
bigger partners. And because they've got customer facing experience, regardless of the level of their customers, you know, the size of the seats and what have you. But they're doing the same job, and it's the same job. They're sitting at home, they're doing the same job, and it's 10, 15, 20 grand more. Well, why wouldn't you?
It's interesting. I mean, some marketplaces tend to be quite incestuous, don't they? You know, everybody knows everybody else, and you know, as an employer, you know the other employers and employees of those other companies. And you
welcome to the Microsoft partner space.
Absolutely, yeah. You end up kind of swapping. And I think when you start to do that, it really does start to be, you know, how you differentiate yourself as an employer. Because as you say, if the role's the same, then it's, well, what's on top of the role? What's the, you know, the ways of working? Is it hybrid? Is it in person? What is the culture? You know, what learning opportunities do you have? What, you know, potential opportunities can you, you know, achieve when you're employed? And those are the sorts of things that kind of differentiate an employer. And I think, you know, as an employee, those are the really important questions to ask when you're actually going, okay, if I've got two places and they're offering something similar, what are the differentiating factors that you kind of choose between? And that feels like that's kind of almost a space where, you know, a prospective employee needs to feel more empowered to ask those pokey questions than necessarily they have done, you know, before the pandemic. It would be more of a, right, I just need this job, that sounds better, as opposed to, is this actually going to suit me, the way I want to work, where I am in my career, what I want to achieve, you know, what my home life is like, what my, you know, my preferences are with regards to location or working hours, or, you know, how I manage childcare and all of those good things as well.
I think what I certainly wouldn't want to do is kind of put the pandemic as this watershed moment in history. It kind of was, but it's not just that. People have been, you know, people who have been moving in the consulting industry, for example.
It's kind of accelerated what was happening rather than change necessarily.
Definitely. Yeah. But, you know, going back, the questions were always, how much time are you willing to spend on the road? If you think back to it, you know, how often are you comfortable staying away from home? There were companies that we used to recruit for who would say, from a Sunday night to a Friday, you're ours. You will go where we need you to be. And for a lot of people, like you said, work-home balance, you know, it's not quite that. That didn't work for people. You know, I couldn't just up sticks and go traveling for the whole week and be back at weekends.
It's what kept me away from consultancy quicker than I probably did, was the thought of having to be away so much. And that's what changed things. It was kind of like, well, actually, now it's more remote. There's more options. And even as the pandemic hit, even more so.
And those sorts of things are massively important for people to be asking today. Is, you know, is there actually an element of travel? I don't know what you guys are seeing, but I don't know any real customers at the moment of ours who are saying, right, you've got to be out traveling around and going and seeing people, because there doesn't seem to be any appetite from from the end customers to particularly have lots and lots of people on site if it can be done remotely or, you know, over Teams, those sorts of customer meetings.
I'm starting to see, and from speaking to others, that pre-sales conversation is a little bit more. So there's initial workshops, those kind of chats before, you know, contract sign, getting that face-to-face is making a difference. When it comes down to actually doing the work, no, very minimal. So you build that relationship by meeting up front, and then you carry that on by being remote after that and working on camera, because you know those people, you can have those chats, you've kind of had that quick coffee afterwards, or even if you're lucky, a quick beer after work as well. And that's kind of cemented how people know each other, that you can carry that on throughout the project, and that's making a difference and helping Wingfins as well, but slightly more, not massively.
People by people.
Yeah.
And you can't get away from that.
No.
Going back to what you were saying just quickly, Al, I always say to people when they're considering a new role is don't just look at what you're going to get now. Think about where it's going to end you up in the next 2 years or 3 years. Mm-hmm. What is your skill set going to look like? How is that going to be different? Yeah. You know, and that career progression into something new. And I think anybody who is considering a role now or in the future should be looking at, okay, where does this get me? Because I firmly believe in talking to people about their careers as opposed to jobs. Yeah. And I think that that's having been doing this for such a long time, you know, I can see the different career paths for people from where they are at each stage in their career. You know, you go here, you do this, and you sort of end up here. And so having those sorts of talks and being able to say, look, if what do you want? Where do you want to be? What do you end up doing? I had a chat with a guy today who was telling me that he doesn't want to do lots of pre-sales work and design work and wants to go back to do delivery because he's happier doing that. And I'm like, all right, cool. Let's figure out how to get you to do that, because he's going to have to slightly change his skill set to be going and doing that. I think so much of what I do is kind of finding out what somebody wants and then trying to help them figure out how to get from point A to point D, and that's frequently the bit that I enjoy the most. Not actually, it turns out, running a company. Don't enjoy doing that. There's far too many spreadsheets and far too much government input, you know. So I can have a chat with someone about their career though. I love that.
Maybe on that one, on the A to B, and you know, you've talked about the skills gap. I guess two different questions. One, what are you seeing in terms of people learning and moving into things? And in terms of that skills gap, are you seeing that as a particular skills? Is it the gap in kind of modern skills, cloud-based? Is it generally across everything? Are there particular areas that people should be considering? Maybe that last question first. I'll come back.
Let's start with that, and then you can remind me what the first one was, but I've forgotten. I think so the skills gaps that we see are frequently around Microsoft, either doing one of two things. Either their marketing department decides once again that they hate people and they're going to rebrand everything, or they're going to take a load of products which shouldn't sit together, smush them together, and then say, there you go, that's this suite. And then 3 months later, when someone says, I need somebody with, you know, who is a
10 years experience,
EM&S consultant. Let's go with that one, shall we? You know, an EM&S consultant. Yeah, perfect. Lovely. Because systems management and identity and security, they were such happy bedfellows before Microsoft decided to put those together. So frequently the skills gap is that Microsoft changes something and employers react to that, but nobody's kind of gone, all right, but those people that do that won't do that. You know, it doesn't make
sense. And so I guess the first part of my question that I had was, are you seeing companies kind of helping people learn into that? And is that part of the equation of when you look at a company, will they help train on that, or are they just looking to buy ready-made?
So it's such a difficult question to answer. So many times we'll speak to a company and they're looking to buy in the talent because they need Defender for whatever it is these days. And then, or, you know, they've started doing something with Sentinel. And so from they need to bring in those skills into the business because it's a new service offering. I think a lot of our customers also react to whatever Microsoft is particularly pushing that year in terms of where the growth is. And so we've seen it across Skype for Business, Teams. We've seen it across Azure, 365, you name it. It just depends on what's new, you know, Power Platform, for example. And so organizations will look to buy in those skills. That's kind of stage one. That's the firefighting level. And then what we usually see 6 to 12 to 18 months later is that once those sort of specialists are in and you know, actually productive, is they'll then look to, if they've got something about them, they'll then look to sort of bring in and develop people into that sort of an area. But that's a long process and it's a slow build to get someone up to speed in a certain area.
By which time Microsoft decided their focus has gone elsewhere.
Yeah, they've been headhunted. They've been headhunted to go elsewhere, you know, and they're moving roles and doing that. It's a constant battle for organizations, you know, employers to figure out, okay, how do we upskill? Ultimately, the people who I know who are the most successful are the ones who take control of their own learning and go out and start doing it themselves. They don't rely on what an employer wants because
great tip.
In my one and only talk that I give, I was told that it's an evergreen talks marketing. It's evergreen, you know, it's beautiful.
At least pitch it that way.
Exactly. Yeah. It's you know, the thing is the information that's in it hasn't changed because actually I still firmly believe that this is what you need to do. The people that I'm quite clear, organizations will train you in what's good for their company.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily what's better for you as a person. And actually if you're relying on your organization to train you and you're waiting for certifications and all that kind of thing, you can find yourself being left behind quite quickly or being pushed down a route that you don't particularly want to do.
And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges for a lot of people is that their employers, as you say, are looking out for themselves. The ecosystem, the technical ecosystem that they've got in place. Some of them aren't as quick to move as you'd want them to be for a multitude of different reasons. But as an employee, I mean, I've always kind of just gone, well, that looks quite interesting. I'll have a go at that. And, you know, going off and learning that stuff and then bringing it back to go, oh, well, look, did you know you could do this with it? You know, you can kind of shape your own destiny that way by saying, actually, I've got a set of skills that are core skills that my employer needs, but I can build on those. And, you know, if you're interested, there's lots of different ways to do that, you know, through the community, through doing certifications. But that genuinely helps you kind of be A, more employable by other people, but B, to be able to kind of put your hand up and go, oh, I'll have a go at that internally as well, which, yeah, I've always been a big fan of just kind of going, could I do this, please, and seeing what happens? Because what's the worst that can happen? They go, no, we're never going to do that. Oh, okay, well, I now know maybe my future isn't where I thought it was. But being able to...
Whereas I do it and ask forgiveness later, which is why I get in more trouble.
Yeah.
It's but I come up against a lot of people who have a very, very entrenched view that work is work, and so work should be doing these things. And actually, you know, learning on their own time is something which, you know, they're not gonna do. And unfortunately, they're frequently the people who, over a period of time, find themselves sort of slightly more entrenched in an organization that isn't quite as dynamic as perhaps they would want to be. And that in itself feeds this feeling of unhappiness and what have you. And so my podcast that I haven't done for a while.
2 years old yesterday, wasn't it?
It was two years old yesterday. Yeah, yeah, thank you. I haven't done anything for 12 months because it turns out that running a business is not actually easy. So I think there's five things that people can do, and that's what the purpose of the podcast is. The first thing is just to kind of figure out what you want to do, you know, actually sit down, do it. The second thing is to do more than you're doing currently, and sort of step it up a gear. That's the third thing. The second thing is to have a plan, figure out a plan of what you're going to do, and then do more. And then it's to find the community, because I think the Microsoft tech communities are just such an untapped resource for so many people. They don't even know that they particularly exist. And then the last thing is to actually, you know, start sharing your knowledge in that community, because so many of the people I know have done that, and it has led on to bigger and better jobs. And I'm not talking people that have turned into Microsoft MVPs or what have you. I'm talking about people who don't want that sort of limelight, but who want to learn and grow and maybe make a career change or a step up or something like that.
And you don't have to stand in front of a big room of people to be sharing. You know, there are blogs, there's all the open source world that we've talked a lot about on there. I think I'd add on to that, trying to find a passion. You talked, Will, and I never like kind of criticizing for people who don't want to learn outside of work.
I'm not criticizing. I'm absolutely not.
I wasn't saying you were, but I think it's more that, you know, for people, there is a job and then they have their passion. If you're lucky enough to try and be able to pull those two things together, you're in a perfect position because you've got that passion for learning. So finding those things, I always love Clifford's Agius, I don't know how to say his surname, another one I've started reading it, who's a BA pilot and loves developing on Internet of Things. And so you kind of, his Twitter feed is lots of stuff about flying, photos from the cockpit on there. He's retraining onto, I think it's the Airbus at the moment, but then also goes and gives talks about the Internet of Things because that's his passion on there. I'm sure he'd love to kind of play on Flight Sim and do, you know, he still has that passion for flying, but he managed to find those two different things. And I'm sure one day he will stop flying and carry on with the development and finding a career in that as well. So finding what really interests you and keeping to that will keep your career going as well.
I think the other thing is the acceptance that IT is now a space of continuous change. It's not going to stay still for long. And, you know, we've seen this probably over the last 6 or 7 years as, you know, Office 365, now Microsoft 365, things like the Power Platform, you know, being cloud platforms, they are continuously changing. And that does make it easier for organizations to add, as you said earlier, Will, new product suites, new features, new capabilities. That's not going to go away. And I think there's still a lot of the mindset for a lot of organizations of, well, we've invested, we're going to sweat our investments for a couple of years. That doesn't necessarily mean that those things aren't going to carry on changing. So, you know, as a practitioner of those tools, an administrator of those tools, just being aware that, you know, staying on top of those changes, even small things that you learn, can have a significant impact on your day job when you kind of come back and go, oh, I've just learned how I can use this new feature that's just come out, or this feature that I never knew about. And that, even those little small nuggets of information, can be incredibly impactful in terms of your reputation internally about, oh, she knows about that. She knows, she's really good at that. She shared me this great little tip that I've been using ever since. You know, so all of those sorts of just the little things. It doesn't have to be, I'm going to go out and do 17 exams and come back with a certification. It can just be, I've spent 20 minutes at the weekend and I've just kind of gone, oh, there's a new feature. I've watched one YouTube video and I've got a nugget of information. And I think, you know, it doesn't, we need to realize that, yeah, becoming an MVP is not the aspiration for everybody.
Yeah.
But sometimes just staying on top of those little changes can be incredibly powerful.
And I think one of the things which is really kind of come on leaps and bounds over the last few years is the different ways of learning. So yeah. Obviously you've got things like YouTube with short videos and micro learning and stuff like that. There's blogs for people that prefer to consume sort of written content. And you know, it doesn't have to be a Microsoft exam. It doesn't have to be an exam of any sort. It's, you know, I think people are constantly
hands-on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. You know,
one of the questions I used to ask when I was a hiring manager and hiring people was, how do you learn? You know, so I could understand, you know, what kind of opportunities, you know, we could offer based on how the style of learning that people knew. And it was interesting because so many people went, don't really know, not really thought about it. And it's one of those key things that you can go, great, if an organization and you join them and they've got a subscription to Pluralsight, to LinkedIn Learning, you know, there's all these different ways that you can actually consume information. If they suit your way of learning, that's a good match straight away. It's already a hidden benefit that maybe they hadn't thought about.
Absolutely. One of the other things was, I was wondering, because I was looking at the cameras of all three of us and realizing we're very white, pale, middle-aged men on there. But one of the things I've heard the younger generation coming through are particularly intent on is kind of purpose of companies and understanding the purpose and where they fit within that. We've obviously talked around Viva goals and how you can align things there. Are you seeing any trend in people looking for roles that sort of fit a wider purpose? You know, as people are moving further out, they're looking at more nonprofits or more ethical places to work?
That's a really difficult question for me to answer because we are so entrenched in sort of one niche area, which is that, you know, that Microsoft partner space. In terms of...
I guess in the Microsoft partner, you could almost look at kind of partners that get more involved in the community and spread things there, which maybe not so much not-for-profit or things, or do they care about the organization itself, or you're not seeing that particularly in your area?
I think organizations that have values that are clearly defined do better, I think. And when organizations are on a bit of a mission to do something, it means that people can buy into that from a bigger picture perspective.
So not necessarily ethical, but trying to do something
if you're after something from an ethical perspective, you're going to probably, you know, if you've got deeply held beliefs about certain things, you're probably going to kind of gravitate towards those sorts of organizations sort of automatically. Most of the people that I tend to talk to are focused on kind of, you know, almost more what's in it for them. And that's not to make people sound mercenary. It's frequently that, you know, they're interested in the company, yes, but a lot of companies on the face of it are quite similar.
Are they going to support me?
So it comes down to, you know, how will they support my growth? You know, what's the attrition rate within the company? Mm-hmm. You know, do they have those sorts of team building days that we sort of mentioned previously? And you know, are they, you know, there are some companies who wear on their sleeve the kind of the social responsibility that they have and the kind of work that they do. And those are always companies that are easy to recruit for because they, you know, they seem like good people from the outside before you even get in there to understand more about them. You know, Pride Month is one thing which, you know, gets a bit of an eye roll from a lot of people that I know because big companies, big brands, you know, they change their logos to reflect the rainbow for 1 month. But frequently the conversations that I've had with people within those communities is what are they doing outside of that to support?
How can they truly people, demonstrate, you know,
for the
it,
other 11
not
months?
Just be marketing? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think frequently that is, you know, that is kind of seems a bit of a marketing thing, but that's not to say that, you know, it doesn't actually give benefit to by raising awareness and what have you. But these are all, you know, we live in a diverse world, and you know, and it's wonderful to see more and more people coming into the industry, because yes, you know, traditionally it is fairly white, middle-aged type thing. And I'm going to stop you there because middle-aged, but
white old men. Yeah.
Thank you. That's oh, Kevin.
Well, it's funny you talk about sort of the Pride Month of things. I love Sharon O'Dea, who always I can't remember the day. I think it's International Women's Day. I think she talks about it, and you have a lot of companies sharing about, we support International Women's Day. And she automatically replies back to them with, well, how come your gender pay gap is this and things like that? And funny enough, they block her and go very quiet on stuff like that. And it's
strange,
it's interesting to see these kind of a lot of people raising that as an important thing when they look at companies. And as someone who started off their career in investment banking, you know, it's something I do think about a bit more on that when looking at companies. And I'm hearing more and more the kind of generation, especially in their 20s and early 30s, are thinking a bit more about that and not just gravitating to the largest organizations. And I think Microsoft is doing fantastic things when you compare them. You know, we were talking about Twitter, Facebook, Amazon, and others, the kind of more ethical and sustainable thing that Microsoft talks about and demonstrates as well. And I was reading some things about the focus on sustainability at the moment is brilliant. Not perfect, we know that, but really trying to demonstrate some change within there.
It's thoroughly baked into the culture in terms of all aspects of sort of management and everything. So it was quite surprising when I joined Microsoft exactly how prominent it is. Just so we've got Pete. Hey, Pete. Nice to have you live. Pete's put a question in. So he says, as a parent to a son in his GCSE year, I feel that the technology curriculum is massively out of date and doesn't prepare school leavers at all for a career in tech. Be interested to hear our thoughts on that.
I'll say
that, you know, my daughter, she hasn't done very much IT as part of her school in terms of specific subjects, but they've tried to bake it into every subject. But she's probably done more on her own to prepare herself than the school has actually done. It's more, all right, can you use Word and PowerPoint? And, you know, can you help the teachers to learn how to use Teams when they need to? That feels like about the most that she's done in terms of what the school has given her. But it does feel like that's not necessarily a preparation for, you know, how do you actually get into more of the technology sector of how you enable organizations to do it? How do you code? How do you build solutions, design solutions, which is very interesting for me because that's what I did, but it's not necessarily easy to understand what that offers at school age.
My son is 11, so he's finishing up his primary, so he's due to go to secondary school next year. And one of the things that you know I was quite keen to understand was what is the technology curriculum like in the schools that we're sort of considering for him. I guess my issue is that whatever they tell me now, it's not going to be relevant in 5 years' time anyway. And that, I think that's the biggest problem with education.
Well, you hope so anyway.
Please God. You know, but so often, you know, for a lot of some of the schools that we've looked at, they didn't have the funding to allow them to have a particularly strong, a strong sort of curriculum in this area. I think my take on it is that it can't be driven by the school. It has to be down to, as you've said, figure out what you enjoy doing. You know, do you enjoy? So my son is absolutely mad for Minecraft and Roblox. And and so, you know, his ability to build stuff in Minecraft is ludicrous. And he's now thinking about, you know, coding and wanting to sort of build stuff in Roblox. And I've said to him, not for a little bit, you know, because it all seems a little bit unstructured and unsafe to me.
Great way to make a fortune, isn't it?
Well, maybe, but he'll probably have spent mine first, you know, before we get to that on bloody Robux.
You've got a fortune.
mate, I haven't. That's the problem. You know, I really wish I did. I genuinely wish I did. You know, now I, you know, he's like, oh, can I have 1,200 Robux? No, you can't.
So
I think, sorry.
So go ahead, Will.
No, so I was just going to say, I think that for anybody who is considering a career in technology, in that sort of that GCSE type year, is to look at what they can be doing themselves in terms of personal learning in the areas that interests them, and then be looking at courses that support that, be that A-levels, be that slightly more, you know, you could be looking at apprenticeship
outside
routes.
Of that as well.
Yeah, look at the apprenticeship routes, because those sorts of routes, they're hard work. But I tell you what, you come out of it after 3 or 4 years with an apprenticeship and 3 or 4 years of actual real world experience. And I would say that actually those people are more employable in the short term than a graduate, you know, who's gone and done a degree.
I think I would echo that in terms of the number of apprentices that I've had the honour to work with who have started off being, you know, right, is this like secondary school? Tell me when I have to take a break, to end up being phenomenal consultants and really good at what they do, really having learned on the job. I could probably name half a dozen who are just, made a significant impact on the organizations they were working for. And I think the other thing is this. So you said about your son being into Minecraft and Roblox. When my daughter she must have been 13 or 14, she was into Minecraft. And one of the user groups in London, one of the Azure user groups, they actually set up a Minecraft day on a Saturday to go and learn how to code Minecraft and actually do some AI in it, which was a fantastic experience. It was fraught in terms of not all demos worked particularly well, but it really did open her eyes up for the first time to go, well, this is what coding is. Okay. Which I think is one of the key things that schools are really bad at, is going, what is coding? You know, you get all these lovely little noddy little things, but actually going, right, I can place a Minecraft block using these lines of code, was a real eye opener.
I think that was Richard. That was Richard from the UK user group, wasn't it? It was
Richard Conway.
Yeah, Conway.
It was fantastic. And I would say, Will, for your son, check out the Microsoft store in London. They're still running a lot of things for kids around Minecraft and coding. They offer free days. You go onto their website, they offer a whole load of things. And that would be my advice for people is, yes, the education may not be great, but there are so many companies like Microsoft that are offering things for free on there. I know the Cubs, I'm a Cub leader, and the Scouts do this. They offer digital badges. So I taught, I think we got 9 or 10 of my Cubs to do a check-in in GitHub. Arcade.makecode.com. They could have all learned about that. They all created different sprites, and they realized the value of source control on there, and they all have GitHub accounts and been checking things in there, so they can learn different ways. I was actually talking to a friend's daughter yesterday. They were around for Sunday lunch, and she was like, I don't want to do coding, but I kind of like IT. And it popped up my phone just so I was chatting to her. The NCSC is doing a competition, I'll put this in the show notes, to get 12 to 13 year old girls involved in national cybersecurity. There are so many different, and I know we've talked about this a lot, things, but there are so many different routes in it. Isn't just about coding. You can find different ways around tech that may interest to people, and to try and understand what else is out there. We should all be helping as many people as possible.
The other thing that I see when I'm driving around High Wycombe, where I live, is signs for Code Ninjas.
Yep.
And then when you come across the Code Ninjas, and that's run at the local university for training different ages, and basically it's an extracurricular club for learning how to code. And I think there's so many of these extracurricular things going on now that the schools, they're almost teaching certain things, and the curriculum is somewhat dated. But for those who are interested, as with any sport, there's always those extracurricular locations and places where they can actually learn as well.
One of the people that we were exhibiting at South Coast Summit this year, and one of the people that came up was this young lad who couldn't have been more than
Prasad.
Yeah, I think so. And he'd been doing all the Power Platform certifications to start with, and I think that sort of led on to other things. But it was just one. It made me feel so incredibly old because I was just like, this kid knows far more than me already. And two, you know, but it was just so, it was incredibly inspiring to see him there with his dad, and both of them had done pretty much the same stuff. And he was wandering around and he wanted our Lego set. He didn't get our Lego set. But yeah, it was, you know, yeah. But it's fantastic. And I think everybody who is interested should try it and see what they like, because the amount of resources that are out there are just massive, absolutely yeah. massive. Yeah. And there's never been a better time, I think, in history to be going, actually, I'm quite interested in something, because you can just yeah. search for it.
You can go and get for it. Or watch some TikTok videos on it. I mean, yeah. joking aside, I know I was speaking with Kat Beedim very briefly at the Viva Explorers Day on Saturday, and she's getting a lot of traction on TikTok doing short videos about Microsoft stuff. So there's all sorts of things you can
learn. I've actually seen her on TikTok, yeah. I've seen some of her stuff.
Let me where you dropped in. Yeah, I'm on TikTok, yeah.
Oh, I'm not on TikTok. I'm okay. I have a TikTok account, but you know, I kind of, you know, the
more suits for us,
yeah. mate. It's difficult enough with LinkedIn, let alone you know, and Twitter, and now suddenly we were supposed to be on TikTok as well.
Jesus. I've got time to watch all those videos.
Exactly.
I know we said we'd try and wrap up at 5:30. I've got one more question for you, Will. If someone is thinking about, you know, they're feeling a bit frustrated in their job, thinking about should they go and look out for other things. Apart from the obvious, come and speak to you. What should they be thinking about doing?
Before they do anything, they should sit down and decide what they want to do next. Like I speak to people all the time who are bored, frustrated, happy, challenged, not challenged. You know, it entirely depends. But I can have a chat with anybody about anything. But I can't provide any advice on anything unless somebody says, actually, I'm trying to figure out, you know, I want to get to here. Mm. Or it might be, I don't know which way to go because I've got this option and this option. And, you know, that's another thing that I can sort of talk to people about. But it's so much simpler for somebody to sit there and say, actually, what do I enjoy in my job? What do I not enjoy in my job? What bits do I want to lose and what bits do I want to keep? And where does that sort of lead me? What sort of role does that lead me into? And I think that for me would be the first thing and the most important thing, because without knowing that, you know, without knowing where you want to end up going to, you're kind of just lost.
Yeah. And I think
you're going to hit the same problem somewhere else.
Yeah.
One thing that I would add to that is it's worth trying to find somebody to be a mentor, to be able to somebody that you trust to actually, you know, have those discussions to help you kind of explore some of those thoughts, because it can be really difficult to do that on your own. Mm-hmm. And to kind of go, actually, you know, oh, I've just spoken to Will, fantastic recruiter, but he's asked me this question of what I want to do and I don't know how to answer it. So looking for somebody, maybe not in your current employment, but maybe in your last job, or, you know, somebody
that
you maybe
met in a department sometimes, you know,
yeah, or somebody
you've met in to be outside. Yeah.
Somebody you've met in the community, maybe, yeah. you know, and just reach out. Cause I think, you know, a lot of us in the community are happy to support and help and have a lot of experience to share as well. But sometimes it can be, you know, useful to actually, you know, ask people what their journey has been like to get to where they are. What kind of route have they taken in order to kind of help understand what might shape the answer to that question that inevitably Will ask you. Because you need, as you say, Will, you need to have that kind of direction to help kind of shape, well, do I want to do this or do I want to do that?
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with saying, I enjoy my job. I just want a bit of a change. So actually, yeah. I want to yeah. do this. Things, but somewhere else with a bit more money and a bit more training, and you know, I'd like a bit more of a home balance, you know, and that's perfect, because at least then the person is clear on what it is that they're looking for. So often the conversations start with I'm not happy and end with I'm not happy, and so much of what I have to do and we as recruiters do, and I think I genuinely feel that you know, recruiters get a bit of a bad rep in the industry, frequently with reason. But I say, think
you are a shining example of what they should be, not what many are.
You're making me blush now,
I mean, the fact you've talked about so many technical things and vaguely know what you're talking about is impressive.
Very vague. Do you know what I mean? It's like a high level. It's so really, high. Compared it's with mate, you know, I have hidden shallows. That's basically what we're saying, isn't it? But I think
I love that phrase.
That's just Will Rowe, he has hidden shallows. I don't know what I was saying. I've lost the plot now. But it is, but no, that's right, recruiters. But a lot of what we do as an industry is to provide that shoulder for someone to lean on and go, I'm just having the worst time. And I think that's frequently it's something which gets missed in the usual recruiter bashing that we'll see on various platforms. And actually we do a good job and we work hard and as an industry, we need to be better. And as an industry, we should be better in so many ways, but actually our job is really tough. It's really hard. And it's trying to balance all of the relationships between someone who's looking for a job and someone who's looking to hire and the numerous people that we'll talk to or won't talk to or, you know, get ignored by or, you know, got ghosted today. That was exciting. You know, all this kind of stuff. And I think that's an important thing for somebody to be able to feel that they can talk to a recruiter and say, I'm a little bit lost here. So yeah, that's where I'm coming from my shallow place over here in Kent.
No, I think that's the perfect place to wrap up on. So, Will, we talked about the fact you're a recruiter. I don't think we've mentioned the name of your company, which I really think we should do. So give us a quick 10, 20 second pitch.
Lovely. So I own MS Talent and there are now four of us. We started nearly 18 months ago, and we've grown fast. I was planning on being in my bedroom for 12 months, and I still am, but you know, now I have people who rely on me. I'm not sure about
people
that.
Come into your bedroom with you. Yeah,
exactly. They do actually sometimes. Yeah, not in a weird way, Kev. But you know, I'll refer you to your previous comments about being in people. But the So we focus predominantly on the Microsoft technical space. We also place people who are salespeople in the Microsoft space as well. And we place people from managed services and support through to heads of practice, architects, MVPs. Exciting. As well as everything in between, but all within the Microsoft space across Azure and M365.
Fantastic. Thank you. So yeah, whether you're looking to hire people, whether you're looking to get a job, get in chat with MS Talent. And the reason I love speaking to Will is it's always entertaining. He cooks great food, but he actually cares about what he's talking about. And I think that is what we don't see from many recruiters. So it's always nice. People like yourself, Alison Mulligan and others who kind of get involved in the community as well. I think it makes a difference and it does show.
I think she shed her recruitment persona quite a while back. She bloomed into a lovely butterfly from the caterpillar of the recruitment the recruitment world. You know, she's like a blue-haired butterfly now.
I'll tell her you called her a caterpillar. But anyway,
do you know what? You can we'll say that. I've got blue back hair. Do you know what I mean? It's fine. I haven't got it on my head. I haven't got it on my head at all. You know, it's like it's thick, like a beaver's pelt.
Just in case, in case anyone misheard that was back, not back.
Back hair. Back hair. Butt there we hair. Go. Yep. Yeah. It's lustrous. Not like what's up here. Just, you know, sad. It's very sad.
And on that crazy note, I want to say thank you very much. We will be back in a couple of weeks with another guest on there. If people do want to come along and be as entertaining as Will, aka.ms/GHBB. BP, I should say. Check us out on there. We'll put it out on the socials as well. So yeah, we'd love to have some guests and hear from you all. And don't forget to hit subscribe, listen to us and all that other good things that I should mention that I never do until the end. And hopefully you've got this far. But otherwise, thank you very much, Will.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's been a real pleasure.
And we will
as always, Will, as always.
As always, absolutely. Thank you and see you all soon.